Welcome to In Case of Emergency, your podcast about insights into crisis management and emergency notifications. Your podcast source related to business continuity, emergency response, public alerting, and much more. We believe that sharing information, learnings, insights, and best practices is so important, which is why we're very happy to present this podcast to you. My name is John Davison, and I will be your host for this podcast series, In Case of Emergency.
As an Italian, I am deeply concerned about the flooding and the flash flooding, because you may be aware that Italy has had a series of events also in 2022. The last one was like 10 days ago in Emilia-Romagna. It was a complete disaster there, and also in Tuscany. So we are deeply concerned on how we can improve, how we can provide the first responders and also the authority, you know, the tools to tell people to evacuate or leave the area, or to be prepared to evacuate, or, you know, like, go on a higher ground, higher, you know, like floor, to stay away from the water. So yeah, this is, I think, very important. And
I think Alessandro, if I may, you are experiencing that in the north of Italy and southeast of France as well, which is actually the Mediterranean events are known, actually. So in a way, you are maybe better prepared, because for years you know that it happens. Now that with climate change, this type of Mediterranean events are coming north, and people are not expecting this. And you remember that in July 2021, in Belgium, Germany, and Luxembourg, people were not expecting such severity for the flash flood. They say, well, it rains, and they did not listen to the scientific advice. And what happened is that it has eaten very, very strongly some cities with casualties, more than 130 casualties. Now in the southeast and north of Italy, well, there are a lot of damages, this is absolutely clear. But in terms of evacuation preparedness for citizens, it's better, because people are used to. But when it's coming up, due to climate change, we need to anticipate that, this crisis. In the north of France now, it's terrible, huh, what happened. And it is really a net result of climate change.
Yeah, I have a very clear memory of the events in 2021. I recall that they sent something like 1.6 million of SMS to citizens in less than 24 hours, providing them campaign with updates, what's going on, you know, how to behave, and so on and so forth. This is important. And this will be even more important in the future, because citizens need to be, you know, part of the, you know, of the chain that enables prompt recovery, you know, when these type of events take place. Talking about, you know, challenges, we're talking about community resilience and resilience in general. What do you think are the, you know, the very big challenges in community resilience in the next 10 years? So let's take a little wider, you know, like, scale. What do you think there will be the challenges?
My strong feeling is that we will not be able to achieve a community resilience if we don't involve the local authorities and people and citizens. So by involving, I mean, involving them in research is important, but it will not make a big difference. What needs to be changed are the mentalities regarding disasters. And if I give you an example, in Japan, you know that they are facing earthquake, possible tsunami risk, and so on. From the very early age, at school, from elderly age, they know how to react. It will not necessarily save their life, unfortunately, but they know how to react. And they are better prepared in terms of infrastructure as well. If we don't realize that we need to raise awareness, risk awareness at all level, coming from school to the whole society, and say, okay, this might happen, and this is a way you might in fact react, and enable people to take ownership of their safeguard, that is trying to have some local community being built. It happens in Italy, and for example, in L'Aquila, you have people who are really organizing themselves with people who are leading actually local communities. But it's only in places where the risks are very, very high. But in many occasions, and for example, you spoke about climate risk, they might come in everywhere, actually. So we need to have to explain citizens that they should not depend only on authorities' decision, that they have to take care of themselves. They should not wait that someone will help them. We have to become to come back to the kind of animal state. Well, survive. But it has to be repeated, you know. We are in a society which are totally linked with internet. Well, if tomorrow there is a big digital breakdown and that everything stops in terms of communication, what will we do? So I think it's next 10 years for me will be back to, I don't want to say to animality, you know, but back to roots where we were 40 years ago without internet, for example, and explain that this can come. Our ancestors, I remember a case because my parents were hit by a storm in 2010, the Xintiat storm. The people who remembered an event of the last century reacted in the right way because they escaped and evacuated. People who came to the place in the 60s and did not know about this submersion, you know, marine submersion, they were flooded and many, many people died because they didn't know the risk. Those who knew the risk because it was transmitted and the memory was transmitted by from the ancestors survived. So it's very, very important, you know, to speak about resilience, coming back to this kind of wisdom that we are losing.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I have the opportunity to work in some of the neighboring countries of the EU where they still maintain certain fissures that we are completely losing to be self-sufficient, to have enough food, you know, for days, to have a generator at home. They have certain fissures that as a, you know, European citizen, because of the globalization, the fact that we have, you know, higher welfare and so on and so forth, we are partially losing. I completely agree with you. And have a little bit of the capacity that our grandfather used to have, you know, grandparents used to have, because they were able to, you know, to address certain situations because they have experience with this. I'm also part of the Coast Guard on Lago Maggiore, and we do awareness campaign for people to how to swim in the lake, because if someone comes from the sea and tries to swim at the lake, the experience is completely different. So you approach it in a way that is not good, and there is huge risk for your, you know, for your life and for the people on the boats and so on and so forth. So I completely agree with you that everything stands more in awareness and you know, in allowing people.
Because we are very good in technology progress, you know, we are making a lot of progress. But what is a very highly innovative method if it's not used and understood by people and not implemented? You know, it is something that we have to keep in mind.
And I also agree on a part that really, really, I try to advocate as much as I can that we need to change the paradigm of crisis management. If you are able to save yourself, you don't have to expect anyone else to do it for you, because you are absolutely capable to drive a car, to run away, to, you know, to do things. And if you are still in the condition where you can do them, you know, of course you need to, you know, yes. So thank you very much for your opinion on this. And as a last question, this is very more personal. What have you learned by working in your profession that you may have adopted as a standard working practice, either in your personal life or in your professional life?
Well, I will actually quote a Brazilian poet and musician. The name is Vinicius de Moraes. And Vinicius de Moraes in Brazilian was saying, "A vida é a arte do encontro." The life is the art of gathering. And I realized that by making people meet from different tourism, different cultures, different disciplines, different sectors, and bringing them in a room and say, okay, you are not here to represent a country or whatever. You are Peter, you are Sandro, you are Carolina, you are coming from, you are Ellen, from different countries. And I speak to you because you know things and we will speak freely. There is no hierarchy among us. And let's share. And this sense of sharing, you know, this art of gathering has been for me a fantastic motor of my work at the Commission, because I'm not necessarily a bureaucrat. You know, I'm doing my job. I did my job during 35 years as a good bureaucrat. I did the best, but I had 20% of my time, which was a little bit free. And I used this freedom to explore new type of gathering. And the community of users is about this, just bringing this. And it was never easy at the beginning to break the ice. But what when you do that, it's fantastic because you are, I would say, enhancing the value of human expertise. And in my private life, I'm doing the same actually because I'm very interested in French poetry, and I see the French poetry, music, Brazilian music. I realized recently that Brazilian Portuguese is very close to one of my local language in the Pyrenees, you know, the which is close to Catalan words, which are the same. The poetry very similar, and trying to explore different type of a musical style. You know, you are bringing French songs, jazz. You are bringing the world of the troubadour. You know, that are everywhere in Italy, in Spain, in Portugal, even in Germany. You have Mina Sanger, and all these stuff things are for me fantastic because you are opening the curiosity. And as soon as you are opening the curiosity of those authors, okay, I'm not competing with you. I'm simply opening your eyes. Then it's fantastic. You can work together and you can create together. Because in the professional life, it's also creation. As soon as you are bringing the room for sharing ideas and working together. So it's what I've learned a lot.
So it's like in an orchestra, right? The important is, it doesn't matter if you make a small mistake, the important is to keep playing together, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And still being curious and not in competition. You know, someone is making a mistake. Well, no problem. You know, we continue and we help him or her to go ahead. And we don't have, you know, I always hate it because I've been working a lot at the university. I've been teaching at the university and I have all, you know, the diploma that you need, you know, I have two doctorates and whatever. But I never use that because for me, I was very close to my students. They were coming from Africa, South America, Asia. And I had the impression to have a dialogue with them as if I would speak to the world in a way, because they were representing a little planet. And this is fantastic. And you can do that only if you are not behaving under your carapace, you know, and under your helmet. So this is quite fantastic.
Yeah, I think this, I completely agree with this approach. I mean, you always need to leave a little room for, or a big room for learning from the others, even though you are the lecturer. You get into the room and say, okay, today I have something to say, but I hope someone will also say something back to me because it's an exchange, you know? So, yeah, that is the grace part. I think very much that throughout my careers, I had the possibility to work with people like you. I mean, you are a clear example for the things you said. And we are lucky because there is other people that have the same belief. We need to talk no matter, you know, which hierarchy or what role you have. We need to talk. We need to, you know, to share and we need to understand. We also need the patience to understand the others, because sometimes you are impatient. So you want results to emerge, but because we are discussing, it's many culture, many people, you need to, you know, wait for results to emerge. So yes, that's...
And it's a fantastic human venture. It's when you are opening like this, it's really, you are enriching yourself and enriching the others.
That's a great goal and a great achievement. And with that, I really thank you very much for your time, Philippe. It was a pleasure to talk to you, to hear from your, you know, from the fantastic initiative you have. I highlight once again for people listening to go check the Cherries initiative, to participate, because this is what the initiative is about, to make yourself available, go see the event, see if you can contribute or see you can get contribution from the others. I think this is important. And with that, I thank you once again and till next.
Thank you, Alessandro. Thank you very much.
The podcast, In Case of Emergency, Insights into Extensive Crisis Management, is hosted by F24, Europe's leading software as a service provider for incident and crisis management, as well as business messaging. If you have topics or questions that you'd like to have answered, or if you would like to share your experience as a guest on the podcast, then just let us know. Write us your suggestions for future topics and please include your contact details by emailing us at marketing@f24.com. Thank you for listening, and goodbye until next time.